So we're going to begin. If you're writing, you can continue to write, and Raghunandan will come visit you. Obviously, people came from faraway places, and the people that came from faraway places have had to return back to their places from which they came. So this is an unusually thinned out question-answer session. But the questions are good questions, and all of this is being recorded. Yes? All of this is being recorded? Raghunandan, this is being recorded?
Yes.
Okay. So even those that aren't here will get a chance to hear the discussion. And Parijata has kindly agreed to come, even though she's going to have to do a Superman routine and a Superwoman routine in about 15, 20 minutes. So we'll call on her first. She has a couple of questions that are already presented.
One of the questions I have is, I would like to get more specific references, Vedic aspects of our relationship to cows and the value of cow milk. So in terms of, and I'm going to break the question up a little bit, there's Ayurveda, esoteric aspects, relationships with cows, and the value of cow's milk. The value of cow's milk is primary. My knowledge of that is limited to Srila Prabhupada's quotes on that, that, you know, it builds fine brain tissue, which all of you know. I think that there's a lot more that one can investigate into that. My other understanding of the value of cow's milk is Krishna loves dairy. He loves milk. And so if we are to offer him something he loves, because that's our aim, to please our beloved, as a servant of the ultimate supreme Lord, we want to offer make the best bhoga offerings, offer the finest. And so it means that we have to find some way to do this. And key to his diet, from our understanding of the supreme Lord and his pastimes, is milk and yogurt and butter. And so, as an institution, as a community, we have to figure that out. And that is why Prabhupada has been so emphatic about protecting cows, keeping productive cows, because they please Krishna. However, it's a huge commitment and a huge amount of responsibility. So it has to be done responsibly. And so as more people step forward, then we can pursue that part of our mission as well. Ayurvedic benefits. Ghee is essential to Ayurveda. It's implicit in cooking. We all know that. But also medicine, medicinal purposes. Almost every treatment in Ayurveda is taken with ghee. And more cultured probiotic ghees. There's a lot more that one could also research, you know, just kind of Googling that. One could also research and find more aspects to that. Our main goal is to please Krishna. And in order to please Krishna, we take care of our body. So Ayurveda becomes relevant. Cows are great. So we can even see how the cow is so interrelated to our well-being. Everything that she's offering is so interrelated to our well-being to serve Krishna. And service to her is essential to manifest that. Our relationship to cows, Krishna is a cowherd boy. There is this often quoted anecdote from Shivaram Swami where he says, you know, who aspires to be a pujari? And all the hands in the room go up. Who aspires to be perfect good cook for Krishna? Hands go up. Who aspires to be, you know, all the wonderful services? And then when he asks who aspires to be cowherd boys and girls for Krishna, then the room is a little quiet. Yet Krishna is going every day, and all his associates, every day, he does the same thing. Prabhupada quotes this in actually his evening lecture here in Vrindavan. In Gitanagari, and he says, Krishna in Vrindavan is a cowherd boy. He gets up in the morning, Mother Yashoda cleans him, decorates him, gives him his breakfast, packs his lunch, sends him to the forest, And he works hard the whole day tending cows. Of course, he kills a few demons here and there and has some pastimes with the gopis and whatever else, and the older gopis, gopas. And then he comes home tired and dusty. And she cleans him up, puts him, you know, gives him his meal, puts him to rest. And what is she doing the next day? And what is he doing the next day? The same thing. And so it doesn't mean that all of us do this, but it does mean that some appreciation and understanding starts to develop in our hearts and in our actions on how we can serve Krishna in this way, in this realm. And so Prabhupada has set up farm communities and so many other ways to serve Krishna, where we support each other in a holistic, in a complete to Damodar to Krishna. Esoteric aspects, I don't know too much about that, except I can just comment that the best understanding, the best way to get that understanding is to interact with the cows. Mm. When we have persons coming that are not familiar with cows or used to thinking of cows as their meal, they are really softened after interacting with the cows. Their hearts are softened, their demeanor is different, they think very seriously about their diet. They may not make an instant transition or transformation, but definitely their whole demeanor has shifted positively. And we see that very often. It's very self-evident. So I would like to invite you to actually experience that. Is that enough for whomever asked the question? Is there anything else that I could comment on regarding that?
Yeah, good.
We're good. Can I do the second question?
You have another one?
Yes.
Go ahead.
Second question, Shivaram Swami.
Slowly.
Shivaram Swami, in his presentation, quotes Srila Prabhupada as saying the Varnashram system needs to be introduced, in quotation. However, we have heard several times at the festival how we are already in Varnashram, even without knowing it. Question, so how to reconcile this introduce Varnashram versus already in Varnashram? What is the synthesis? Thank you. We could analyze a lot, introduce versus already in. I have just an overriding principle to comment. Already, my understanding is, already being in Varnashram is more by default, by how we are engaged. And it's not completely unintentional. It is intentional. We have systems. We have the ashrams. We have leaders who train us to be in various roles, responsibilities that translate into occupational duties and into varnas and into ashrams. It has evolved. It has been quite organic. I find that even for ourselves here in a farm setting, by doing the needful, we are somehow doing different things. Many of us serve the cows, serve the deities, so they're quite different. To introduce, my understanding is more by design. It's more intentional. It's more systematic. I have no clear understanding what His Holiness Shivaram Swami would mean by that, but in my perspective, I would see introduce as being a little more systematic, intentional, and by design. Is there more clarity needed for that question?
Anyone else like to comment on introduce versus it already existing?
Introduce what?
The question is, Prabhupada speaks of introduce, but it's also been said it's already existing, how to reconcile. It was Kante, you made this point.
I think Kante was the
Would you like to speak?
Here.
What she said is fine with you?
Do you want me to say something?
If you'd like.
See, it's a question of definition. It's like playing baseball. Anybody can play baseball, you know, in the backyard, courtyard, throw a ball with your child, but that may not make you like a baseball player, like a professional baseball player. So that's a very good question, which I also have. In other words, when is the day in which we will say, today, Varnashram has been established, full stop? You follow? Yesterday, definitely there are elements of Varnashram which we are practicing and they're existing. Because people are situated in different ashrams and people do serve or work according to their natures and trying to put Krishna in the center. So that essential aspect is already there. But Srila Prabhupada wanted a kind of quote-unquote more professional level also of Varnashram, a more self-sufficient society, civilization. He wanted us to influence the outside world. Okay? Just like in Sanskrit, Jiva Goswami says, the words are like horses. Horses. And so, horses, the animal, yeah?
But what did they say?
Chewing horse. and like the word Purusha, it can mean Jiva, it can mean soul, it can mean the Lord. Huh? So why horses? Because horses can walk, can gallop, trot, or gallop.
Yeah.
Gallop. Thank you.
If you're from Canada, it might be gallop.
And so, similarly, Varnashram, you can see Varnashram at walk, Varnashram at trot, or Varnashram at gallop.
Actually, yeah, it's in logic, there's something called the argument of the beard. And it's very much what Kante Apu was just saying, you know, what constitutes a beard? Is it one facial hair? Or 321, or 5,685, you know, what constitutes a beard? So, what length? So the reality is it's a spectrum, right? From, it's not beard or no beard, it's not no Varnashram or full Varnashram, it's a spectrum.
That argument is also known as the Beardashram Dharma argument.
From Nyaya, right? From Nyaya. So now, I'm going to read another question slowly, which I'm going to then ask Parijata to respond to. How Goshalas can fit in full time at ISKCON farm communities? Do we have a working model in any farm across ISKCON? Should I read it again?
Yes, please.
Sure. How Goshalas can fit in full-time at ISKCON farm communities? Do we have a working model in any farm across ISKCON?
Thank you.
That's your question?
Not Goshalas.
Different animal.
Oh.
About Goshalas and probably wrote that.
Is this your question?
Yes.
Do you want to modify the question?
Yeah, instead of Goshalas, it should be Grahasthas.
Grahasthas. Oh. It sure looks like Goshalas to me. Okay. Parijata.
Marsh, no.
How can Grahasthas fit in full time at ISKCON farm communities? Do we have a working model in any farm across ISKCON?
I'm still supposed to ask.
Yeah, sure. You got to do the Superwoman program shortly.
Krishna, we're
giving you the...
So, to keep it short, Grihasthas can serve full-time farms. On this particular farm, the Yatras, Grihasthas, Dhruva and myself. Other working models in ISKCON, definitely New Rajadham. It's a lot more evolved in its journey. Working farm is something that is maybe not commonly defined. Some of we have many ISKCON farms. Some are working, others are farm settings and not necessarily a typical working farm. Working farm would be defined as productive land, productive cows, care of the land and the cows in all phases of their existence, care of all the devotees in all phases of their existence, and care of all the natural resources, land, air, water, waterways, soil, etc. So, grihasthas, I think, in my understanding, and I made this point in our group when we had the breakout sessions, that just as we set goals, I mean, every one of you sitting here is in some professional environment. If I look around the room, and I think I know most of you, or you're in some organized environment, and any of those environments require goal setting, planning, being pragmatic, being practical, being intelligent, understanding your environment, understanding your role in that environment, and understanding how you want to contribute to that. Specific goals that you set for yourself and for your families. And similarly, serving in Prabhupada's ISKCON is like that. It's very goal-oriented. And depending on how serious we want to be about our Krishna consciousness, what we want to present and make available for our children, then we align our actions with that. And I think it is very practical for many grihasthas to consider transitioning to a rural setting. And I see it happening in phases. It's not as radical as perhaps in Dhruva and my case. I think it's more transitional in that there are very practical considerations for you in maintenance, for example, in having children, the economics. I think it also puts a lot of responsibility on those of us already on farms to create economic models for you to participate in. And that's a significant focus for Gita Nagari, simply because for a long time we had an artificial economy. Most of our farms, we had, you know, paintings or books supporting farms, rather than farms being self-sufficient by producing and creating what we call prosperity, rather than economics. Because when you're part of a prosperity model, when we are part of a prosperity model, like other communities that we sometimes look towards to understand how they are so successful living so simply, then we understand that the measures of that prosperity may be different to what we're conditioned to. And those measures include fulfillment, it includes, you know, a certain environment to raise our children in, it includes certain level of our advancement in Krishna consciousness that becomes more evident than it may be in our current environment. So there's a lot more that can be gained from practicing Krishna consciousness in a rural setting. I don't want to quote some extreme, maybe I should quote some extreme quotes of Prabhupada on that. So
just say it slowly, whatever you do.
Okay. Look, city life is really difficult to practice Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada explains that it's extremely difficult. It's extremely difficult because it's, you know, it's so mechanized, and he also says how you cannot involve. It's quite intense. And so we don't take that to scramble and try to reorganize something. We just take that as something that we absorb into our intelligence and our consciousness and say, well, what would my contribution be for my family, if that's my sphere of influence right now? And what is my contribution to my spiritual master and Prabhupada's mission? And we start setting our goals and activities based on that. So Prabhupada says how on the farms, it's much easier to practice Krishna consciousness because of the sattvic environment. And the whole point, and although we work so hard on the farms, but the whole point is to have more time to chant Hare Krishna. That's the bottom line. We organize ourselves to have more time to chant Hare Krishna. So we may not be commuting like you have to do in the cities. We may not be sitting in many meetings and, you know, keeping many deadlines. There's many ways to achieve those for Prabhupada's ISKCON. However, most devotees have concerns about what is the economics that go with that. How do I maintain? In environments like this, if they're prosperous, abundant, completely set up in a systematic way to provide a Gurukula system, to provide holistic health care, to provide engagement for the women, to provide engagement for the men, for the children, to provide care for the elderly, to provide care for the mothers and their newborn, then it becomes attractive, it becomes reasonable, it becomes a practical goal for our grihasthas residing in the cities. But I think it will only take a leap of faith for a critical mass of devotees to make that transition. And so I think many of you may go back and want to be part of that pioneering team who take that first step forward to say, let's try this. Let's plan it. Let's think about it. Let's organize it. Let's get expert input like the Kunteya Prabhus and others and Maharaj and others to, you know, put together a grassroots level. I leave the rest of the strategy to the ISKCON leaders and the strategic initiatives, but grassroots level, because it can be very customized for our individual needs if we do something at this phase. And so, it's very, my conclusion is it's very practical, it's very reasonable, and Dhruva and I would be very keen to hear what we can do to facilitate that for our grihasthas, whomever is willing to consider that, especially those of you living within a four-hour radius. Because transitional, it means you can keep some aspects of your existing lifestyle and be able to still participate in a project like this.
Harijata has inspired Abhiram. He wants to contribute.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a point of clarification on that, Harijata. I think the question was a practical question, and I think it deserves a practical answer, and I think you did to some degree, but I'm not satisfied. Because the conditions you described have been the same conditions for 40 years. But I don't see any grihasthas here. I see vanaprasthas. I don't see families with children. It's a very different situation. That question was about grihasthas, not about vanaprasthas. And, you know, like, as an example, you and your husband, who we all look up to, you're selflessly working on the farm. That's not a practical model for grihasthas. They have to selflessly work for their children. I remember Srila Prabhupada telling Lakshmimani that your children are your deities. She was asking about, can I do deity service? Prabhupada said, your children are your deities. So, it's a very practical question. It weighs very heavy on us. And I don't believe it's a leap of faith. I believe it's a leap of management that's required. I don't think we're offering them that opportunity. The one householder couple you have now working on the dairy is leaving in October because they don't find their place here. So, and that's not just Itanagari. That's the case in most North American farms. So there is something missing, and I think, at least I was meeting devotees here who were in well-employed jobs and saying, I would do it. I would do it if I could find a way to do it. So, what would you suggest is a way to make this, again, 40 years. This farm is, how many years? More than 40 years this farm has been here. And it had some times when it rose up, but most of the time it was not attracting householders. And I don't believe it was a lack of faith or sincerity. I know it's provocative, but I think truth is more important. And then,
Brajbihari is now inspired to add to the conversation.
Well, I was thinking along the lines of Abhiram Prabhu, and I was thinking really practically. And my experience, actually our experience in North America and pretty much around the world, is just what Abhiram Prabhu was saying, is about children. That if there's a school, and that could be anything from a homeschooling co-op to an ashram gurukul, that there's some place for children. And I find, generally speaking, you'll see grihasthas find a way to eke out a living, even going to a place like Alachua, which is like purgatory. But going to a place like that because there's schools. You know, and I, of course there was a gurukul here. The Prabhupada established a gurukul here in Giranagari, matter of fact. And especially, in, let's talk super practically, right? That a lot of us who have office jobs, if there was a school in a place like Giranagari, there's a lot of jobs these days that allow for full-time telework. So if you had a good enough internet connection, you could still have your office job and live in Juliana County and have your kids going to school. So I think a lot of it has to do with schools.
So I'm going to move on to another question. Not that we answered that question. But, you know, it's another... I'm thinking of the three devotees to my left would like to answer this question. Maybe Vatsal would also. Srila Prabhupada mentioned that ISKCON is meant to produce brahmanas, first-class men. What does it mean in the light of Varnashram Dharma implementation by ISKCON? We'll start with Kontiya, since he hasn't spoken too much.
I haven't spoken at all.
Shall I read it again?
He's been speaking. It's conspicuous by its absence.
See, there are at least two aspects. One is that there is a general occupation, how the person earns his living, especially as a grihastha, and a particular psychophysical nature, tendency, and so on. And then there is a personal lifestyle, personal culture, personal values. So a devotee, a serious devotee, sincere devotee, may be doing a number of work in a number of fields, but his personal behavior, his personal lifestyle would be brahminical. Because if he's a sincere devotee, he will get up early in the morning, chant his rounds, offer his food, take bath, so be clean, clean in mind, clean in the body. For instance, Srila Prabhupada says that it's a duty, in third canto of Bhagavatam, it's a duty of all householder devotees, initiated householder devotees, it is their duty to preach from home. Invite people, share Krishna consciousness. So that's a brahminical function. So the person may be working in a factory, maybe an artist, maybe an accountant, maybe this or that, but that aspect, private lifestyle and the general function in society as a messenger of Lord Chaitanya, that's a brahminical role. Just like Lord Chaitanya say, Yare deko tare kao Krishna padesh, Amara gyaya guru anya tare desh. Whoever you meet, give them Krishna instructions. In this way, become a guru, become a teacher, become a brahmana. So in that sense, everyone is expected to become a brahmana. Does that address the question? I don't know who asked the question.
He asked the question. Abhiram, would you like to contribute something?
Well, I think my question dovetails into that question.
Okay, let's do them both.
So the question here is written, one of the understandings that I received from the retreat is that one needs to understand one's nature, interests, propensities, to better understand which varna they may belong to, and accordingly serve Krishna and this and his parts and parcels. However, given the upbringing, modern education, one may learn to not acknowledge or even work against his propensities. Rather, one may feel very lost when asked this question. What should one do to be able to move forward in identifying these and using them in service? Lord Brahma is certainly situated in the highest. He's the most pure rishi. But he acts in the mode of passion to create the material world. Lord Shiva is Mahadev, the greatest yogi also, greatest devotee, but he acts through the mode of ignorance. When King Priyavrata, before he was asked to be king, he was a Naishtika, situated in the mode of goodness. He was asked to enter the mode of passion and work in the mode of passion, to take a wife, to take on the accoutrements of royalty. Right? This is an example or an indication of what Srila Bhaktisiddhanta also explained. Daiva Varnashram means that we move into our, we're not locked by birth. And this is, I see, an issue that we're stumbling on here. What is my nature? What is my varna? Well, the process of Krishna consciousness leads all of us into the mode of goodness. A Vaishnava devotee, even at a very relatively early stage, can acquire the qualities of goodness and tend to be in the mode of goodness if he stays in the practice correctly. Srila Prabhupada would ask devotees to do things that required passion. So this is an example of a devotee who could be in the mode of passion, goodness, and act in the mode of passion. So I would suggest there's a variety of answers to this, not a huge variety, just a few things. One is that we will have certain shadows that will stay with us, maybe through our whole life, of our birth mode. But they will be strongly eclipsed by the practices of sadhana bhakti, and the mode of goodness will be growing within us. One should take the tendencies that he sees in him and see how they can be dovetailed in Krishna's service. If one can be a manager, for instance, can I do more deity reading? And Prabhupada said, before you were doing, who could do? No, he said, we need management. So he required me to stay in the mode of passion. Of course, he was wise and saw that this was also the appropriate mode for me to serve in, that I couldn't stay fixed in the mode of goodness. But he also valued management. He valued these things. So Daivi Varnashram, one of those characteristics of that makes it Daivi Varnashram is we're not locked in by our birth. And this seems to obsess us, even in our normal conversations amongst devotees. What is my dharma? I'm trying to discover. Am I a sudra? Am I a vaishya? You're a Vaishnava. In Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's books, Brahmana and Vaishnavas, he establishes that a Vaishnava is transcendent to the Varnashram, is transcendent to the Brahmanas. But he acts in different capacities. Right? So, we are flexible. But one should take guidance by elders, proposing his own inclinations to those elders. I feel like I could be a great dramatist for Krishna. That's a sudra activity. But it sounds like a wonderful way to serve Krishna right now. And if the elders are advising and confirming, then one acts in that mode. Actually, our sadhana bhakti and our Vaishnav position is always in pure goodness. So there's this flexibility. It's a little more complex. It's a greatly more nuanced than simply I'm born. And this is, see our tendency. We want to see it simplistically. And this is what's happened to the caste system in India. Okay, you're born in a Sudra family, you're a Sudra. You're born in a Vaishya's family, you're a Vaishya. You have a locked-in proclivity.
Next question.
So it's more complex than that.
Before I do that, could I comment on something that was already commented on? That no, not that particularly. But Kaunteya Prabhu said that what would, you know, what are we going to know when Varnashram has been established? So I have an idea that like we saw this descriptor, heard the description of the Amish group. In New York, My brother lives in New York, so I drive from the temple sometimes to my brother's house to see if he's there. And when I'm on my way there, I pass through this Jewish community. It's a Jewish community. There, you know, everybody around has got a hat and braids coming down and like that. It's obviously a Jewish community. All the buildings, they have something to do with what they do. We see the Mormons. They have communities. Then there are others in America even that have communities. And what keeps them keeps them into their culture, into whatever their culture is that they all work within that community. And I think the issue of Varnashram and all this becomes more complex as we try to, or not try to, but we end up interacting is a good word, with the outside world. The more we interact, we're dependent on the outside world. So and these people, they don't seem so dependent, especially the Amish. They even try to do whatever they can decide. They're making decisions as to, well, will they accept this as part of their community? Will they accept that? They make a decision. We're not sending our kids to school only to a certain age. Stuff like that, because they want to preserve their traditions. They want to preserve their culture, whatever it is, whether it's good or bad. So if we want to preserve a culture of Krishna consciousness, my proposal is that we have to somehow dislodge ourselves to as much a degree as we can from the influences of the outside world. And I think we've become, due to our association, now maybe it's not the particular fault of devotees, but maybe out of necessity, like Abhiram is saying, there's no provision. Because at the beginning of the movement, there weren't so many householders. I mean, I joined as a householder. I was already married when I joined. But most of the devotees were single devotees. So this problem of Varnashram really didn't present itself until later on in years. And so as devotees got married and tried to deal with that whole thing, marriage and raising a family. So when we can be more dependent on each other for our livelihood, for our association, for all these things that make up life, then I think that would be a sign that Varnashram is at least becoming more established. Anyway. That's just some food for thought, I guess, in that direction.
I don't think we're going to need more questions.
Well, there's a couple of questions here Maharaj has given me, and I see the nature of these questions to be very personal. Even all of the questions that I've heard the other devotees come forth is that they're very personal, individual. In other words, somebody writing a question has something that is directly concerning themselves. Therefore, I guess you can do it. You can give some general kind of thing, but there's so many things that I would need to know about that particular person. Because the question seems so personal as to how to answer it. Just a general way, I don't know if that answer is going to be any good. Anyway, here's one. The idea to have a farm annex to an urban ISKCON center is wonderful to give training on making a living out of the land for devotees. For temples to purchase farmland for this purpose, is not going to happen soon. I think this says an interim program be made available in which we could send students to different places where particular skills can be taught. Well, I just was hearing this morning that Abhiram Prabhu has asked Dhruva if some devotees could come here and learn about cows. You know, like apprenticeship. He has some devotees that want to learn about taking care of cows so they can come here and do like an apprenticeship. This is an ISKCON farm, right? Gita Nagari. Now maybe it's not, you know, doing everything that can be done to generate employment for grihasthas, but the facility is there. So if someone's serious about it, then they really want to do it, and that becomes a priority in their life. So this is a possibility. This farm. There's also a farm in Mississippi that devotees are training. What's that devotee's name from New Vrindavan?
Tapa Punj.
He's there, and they're offering devotees to train in how to grow crops, grow vegetables, stuff like that, do farming. They've been doing it for years and years. And so, you know, it's definitely available within amongst devotees, training in those areas. But we have to, again, we have to decide what are we going to be dependent on? Are we going to be dependent on the karmi society, basically, for our livelihood, our sustenance? Or are we going to try to figure out how to become dependent on the land, on in the association of devotees? Hare Krishna.
Could I add to that point about
that? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, this is a very exciting topic. And just recently with, you know, sort of the collaboration starting with a few elder experienced men, Vatsal Prabhu, Bhaktajan Prabhu, and I've been talking to Tapa Punj Prabhu, and I'm sort of an idea person, and also Ramal Padmaraj has actually stimulated some of this idea. But with Tapa Punj and Vatsal Prabhu and Bhaktajan, we've at different times talked about pieces of this educational system. And what I see is that we look at all the farms as a university collectively, each one being a college, and we, some group of us, form a curriculum which would primarily consist of apprenticing, of hands-on work, because farming is like that, isn't it? But with some theory. There are some wonderful books, and the great thing about this is we don't need an amazing once-in-a-million-year acharya lecture, the Prabhupada, to write these books, because we're talking about practical things. We're not talking about the Siddhanta, right? And there are so many great small farmers out there that have written wonderful books. Most of you have probably seen them. And people like Tapa Punj Prabhu and Dhruva Prabhu and others who have direct experience will help us vet which of those, you know, so-called gurus are the good ones, which ones are kind of useless. And, you know, so I'm thinking of, that's one of the ideas that we should be forming, you know, now that I have mature people like Bhaktajan and Vatsal Prabhu. We could start actually hobbling together a type of university for the Vaishyavarna. And the first step is, as Vatsal Prabhu mentioned, I've got Bhakti Lee and Bhakti Garrison. We'll schedule them in as soon as we can replace their positions in New York. I see Bhaktajan turning white. Don't turn white on me, Bhaktajan. Don't faint. He's very dependent on Bhakti Lee. But then they'll come here and spend a few months training, or however many months we find out is required. Then they, through Dhanishta Prabhu and Momopad Maharaj, we've been connected with a devotee, as I mentioned in my presentation, who's surviving on farming, and he is very eager to do the same thing. I looked at his house. He's a little tidying up, but he's got a spare room or two, and he's got work to do on the farm, and he knows what he's talking about. So this is a very practical way to move forward in this, and of course it's ideal for young people. I suggest anyone who's established householder that you immediately start a garden in your yard. Immediately start farming. It's a wonderful activity. If you go no further than that, it's a wonderful thing to do. I did it for many years in my life. Since childhood, I did it. When I lived in India for many years, I always had a kitchen garden in the back. And you know, it's a wonderful way to keep in touch with reality. And it's another aspect of life. So anyway, that's a future and perhaps an immediate future step to start. Yeah. And there's probably three or four boys I can think of now that they're going to be very jealous of Bhakti Lee and Bhakti Garrison because they also want to immediately get into it. And, you know.
Just to add to the, just an anecdote, 1969 in New Vrindavan, Srila Prabhupada somehow asked Burijan Prabhu to make bricks right out of the clay in New Vrindavan. So he made a brick and showed it to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, I want you now to teach the others. He said, this is our philosophy, learn and teach others.
With that, it means I'll have to come and do the apprenticing with them. To get my skills back.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. I'm going to read and then... What seems to be happening is different persons inspired to speak something will do so. A theme that has emerged during these presentations is the topic of pioneering. This can be related to farms, gurukul, the small businesses for devotees, or combinations of all of them. My question is, or how to best learn about, quote, pioneering. I think we just did that. Okay. Put that one away. It was said that we are already, and we did that one too. How can Gurukula system be implemented in the current ISKCON model? I'm thinking there's three obvious general topics. If there was a Exploring Varnashram Part 2, Lee's question would be, you know, an outstanding question. Jayadvaita Maharaj's prodding us would be another outstanding one. And then Kaunteya's, how can the Gurukula system be implemented in the current ISKCON model? Is homeschooling a solution? If yes, is it applicable to devotees, including those in the neophyte stage? Kaunteya, then Braj Bihari.
So the question is, how can Gurukul be implemented?
How can Gurukul, the system, be implemented in the current ISKCON model? Is homeschooling a solution? If yes, is it applicable or even neophyte devotees?
Yeah, we need to be creative. Situations are different, circumstances are different, places are different, our properties are different. We have purely urban properties, we have suburban properties, we have countryside properties, we have different levels of concentration of grihasthas and therefore children. So it may not be one answer. Do A and then do B and then do C. I would say if there is the will, there is the way. Just like to give a crude example, we at one point decide we are vegetarians. And we stop eating meat and fish and eggs. And then, but there is a lot of variety. You know, we could eat rice, we could eat bread, we could eat dal. And we find something to eat. And then we also decide we don't eat grains on Ekadasi. So a large amount of things are also cut off. No bread, no rice, no dal. But we find something. We find some potato, some carrot, some buckwheat, some lettuce, something to fill our belly. Okay? Get creative. So similarly, if we decide we don't want to entrust the culture, the growth of our children to people who are outside the realm of God consciousness, Krishna consciousness, who are not following our principles, who don't share our values, don't share our standards, don't share our worldview. If we decide we are not going to do that, then we'll find alternatives. I think, I don't know if in English you have this, the necessity is the mother of invention. So the necessity is the mother of invention. If we feel it's necessary, we'll find a way.
For those of us who are involved in Gurukul, we used to, of course, like I mentioned earlier, read Srila Prabhupada's statements a lot. And actually, Aviram Prabhu made a reference to a book called Srila Prabhupada and Gurukul, which unfortunately left out a lot of Srila Prabhupada and Gurukul statements. But that's another point. But one time, my wife and I would be regularly reading Srila Prabhupada's statements on Gurukul, and there was especially one Tautaji who, a lot of practical things, right? And so, when you read it in black and white, they say, well, how many, oh, 8 chickpeas, you know, how much rice, and Prabhupada makes a fist, this much rice, you know, how many, 2 chapatis, you know, how long should a class be? 40 minutes. So when you read it in black and white, it looks like. So one day, one fine day, we somehow came upon the recording. And it was, I was eye-opening, maybe an understatement. It was, because when we heard Srila Prabhupada's voice, it was so tentative. It's like, oh, a fistful of rice, 40 minutes. Maybe, you know, it was very like, you know, you figure it out, but here's some idea. But prior to that, we were like, 40 minutes, it can't be, 39, can't be 41, you know.
8 chickpeas, 1, yeah, right. They used to count them.
Yeah, we used to count the chickpeas, that's right, yeah, right. So, so what I'm kind of trying to say is follows on from what Kanteya Prabhu was saying, that although there are talks about, you know, this Gurukul means this, Srila Prabhupada would say different things at different times, and I would also agree that, you know, we find a variety of ways to apply it in practically, you know, today, but find some way to educate our children nicely.
Well, in 1972, I first went to the temple. I already had 2 kids. And I was living in San Francisco in a place called Dog Patch. It was a little residential section that was surrounded by industrial area.
Dog Patch?
Yeah, they called it Dog Patch. And right across the street from our apartment, there was a school. And the school had a wall around it with barbed wire around it and broken glass in the corners of the a lot around the building. And so I said, I'm not sending my kid there. And I went to the temple and, you know, got preached to by the devotees and decided that I'm going to be a devotee. Mm-hmm. And within 2 weeks, I sent my kid off to Gurukula. You know, at 2 weeks of being a devotee, I sent him off to the Gurukula because I figured, you know, I had heard that, you know, and I thought, as one devotee mentioned this morning about, you know, I thought everything was perfect. The devotees are divine. You know, everything was perfect. So, things were difficult for the kids, but they have never lost their core of Krishna consciousness, the core principles of Krishna consciousness that they got in that environment, even though it was difficult. I mean, I have one son, he's about 50 years old now. And he, you know, he doesn't practice sadhana or anything like that. He doesn't follow all the principles even. But if someone gets into a conversation with him, all he talks about is Krishna consciousness. That's pretty much all he knows. You know, that's just all his memories as a youth. And he's not just saying all the bad things that happened or anything like that. He's always happy to tell some story of Krishna or something like that. So, homeschooling, we did homeschool with, we raised our granddaughter, and my wife homeschooled her, and it's certainly better than sending our children to the slaughterhouse, as Prabhu mentioned, but three times Prabhupada said slaughterhouse in reference to the Karmi schools. It's way better than that. Even the Karmis see that the kids that go to, that are homeschooled, they perform much better in higher education, if they go to higher education. This, this whole education system is way out of proportion. Going to college and all this kind of, just like Prabhu was saying. What's the result? You know, half the college graduates are working in McDonald's, flipping burgers or something like that. They can't find employment even, and that was the so-called reason that they went into higher education. So, especially, you know, I live in Houston. It's about 99.5% Indian community. Me and my wife, and there's another devotee that are not Indians. But the other devotee is married to an Indian, who happens to be doing a principle of a Gurukul in Houston that they started about 3 years ago. And every year now they've increased a grade. You know, they started out with like 3 students, and now they have 20 or more. So it's becoming successful. But anyway, what I've noticed for in the Indian community is that they have this expectation that you can't live without having some kind of job as a result of higher education. So they want all their kids to go, you know, that's a fear that they have of Gurukula, is that they won't be educated enough to have employment later on. And as I said before, if you can at least homeschool, you can avoid the bad association of the slaughterhouse and the bad indoctrination from the teachers that are also in that same materialistic mindset. And it's not difficult. And your kid, according to statistics, will do even much better in later on in life. In Idaho, they have, I don't know if you know, the devotees there in Idaho, they've had this, their own Gurukula that they kind of, they really started out of homeschooling, and I think the average age of entering into higher education is about 12 or 13 years old, that they're so successful with that. So, I think the first thing is just to understand the environment that we're sending our kids into when we send them to public school, Karmi school, and how bad it is.
Take it away, Abhiram.
Just a few comments that might add a little more to this discussion.
I'm requesting our speakers to speak succinctly because the clock is ticking and we have some more questions. Succinctly.
Starting with me.
All of us. Parijata went on for a while. I was going to pull the plug, too.
Okay. This might be a footnote of history that you may or may not be aware of. I'm sure many of you are not. And I think it illuminates the issue of picking quality people to run our Gurukulas when and if we start again. Do you know that in the beginning of Vrindavan Gurukula, Srila Prabhupada hired? Was he Dr. Sharma or Mr. Sharma?
Dr. Sharma.
Dr. Sharma. And I remember I was, in my early 20s, and this man was older, much older than my father. So he was probably in his late 50s. And a very fine, very fine cultured gentleman who had an experience of running schools. And he paid him a substantial salary at that time. I can't remember what the time, but because I was a TP and I was hiring people in India and I kind of knew the salary levels. And I thought, wow, that's a lot of money. Right? But the temple president just couldn't tolerate that a non-devotee was running the school. And he gave him hell. And I remember Mr. Sharma, Dr. Sharma coming to Prabhupada. I was there and he was coming to Prabhupada and saying, I'm having these, he just took away all the lunch money, or he just did these crazy bizarre things, made his life absolutely tumultuous until he drove him out. Right? So just emphasizing how much importance Prabhupada put in that role. Now, as far as homeschools, we have an acharya of homeschools sitting right here in the front. Prabhu, I'm forgetting your name. Veerbhadra. Right. Two children, daughter and son. They both chant 20 rounds. They're homeschooled. Is it right? 20 rounds? Or is it more? They've started 32. Sorry. I've slighted them. Yeah. Amazing children. How old is your son?
Eight.
He came to the Harinam Ashram recently, and what did he tell you? He said, Baba, I'll stay here. Just leave me here. Huh? This is a homeschool result. So he's an acharya of homeschool.
Okay.
And just some anecdotes to all
okay.
The points.
We have, these two have not spoken so much, so we'll get them to speak something.
Just about the homeschooling, you know that almost every spelling bee champion is homeschooled, and almost all of them are from India. And if not India, then China. Right? Chinese or Indian. Yeah. And else. For Vanaprastha Ashram, Shivaram Maharaj mentioned in the video that the traditional way of going to forests and living there is possible. Indeed, it would be to leave the family duties and go out to preach the message of Lord Chaitanya, where both husband and wife don't have husband-wife relationship. Instead, they help each other to reach the ultimate goal of life by devotional service and go out for preaching. From this context, can we consider, quote, our ISKCON gurus who are not sannyasis be in the Vanaprastha order? One example I can think of is His Grace Sankarshan Das Adhikari Prabhu. Well, when I first read this, I had to laugh because Adhikari generally implies Vyasa, and that's what he calls himself. So it seems that the term we're supposed to use is Vanachari. Remember Dhanavir, now Maharaj, used to sign his name?
Yes, he did.
Dhanavir Das Vanachari.
Gaurav Vanachari.
And I remember, so I don't know if we've actually figured it out yet. I remember a devotee in Vrindavan who... he was married and then his wife left him, and then he put on saffron and took vanaprastha. And it was a whole ceremony with cloth and the whole thing. So I don't know if we've actually kind of figured it out yet. But if the question literally is, are ISKCON gurus who are not sannyasis, I mean, generally they'll be over 50 years old, which is one of the qualifications, right? Generally, 50 years is the...
Generally.
Yeah, and Srila Prabhupada even mentions that at the age of 50, it's almost like Krishna tapping you on the shoulder that death is coming and time to get prepared. But I think it's how can I say if Sankarshan Prabhu is a vanaprastha? It's really up to him, not up to me. And I haven't asked him that question. So I think it's an individual thing, but in general, yes, Those devotees who are spiritual masters are generally over 50, and therefore they're in, for example. And those who have children, like I'm thinking of my Guru Maharaj, Parijan Prabhu, so he has two children, and one of them's in the 40s and one's in the 30s, so he doesn't have to worry too much about taking care of them. So I guess I never really asked him if he considered himself a vanaprastha. I don't think I've ever heard him use that term. But that was my understanding also personally, that when I turned 50, it was like, okay, well, I guess I'm not really a grihastha anymore. And my son was 20 by then. But I don't, you know, I think it's so individual. My son lives with us right now. He's going to his graduate school. My wife and I live separately. So I don't know, am I a vanaprastha? I just call myself Rajabihari Das. I don't use any title after it, so I don't know what to call me. But maybe some of these other devotees have a clear idea of a vanaprastha. And I mean, the idea generally is that grihasthas have children. So someone like Sankarshan Prabhu, Kauteya Prabhu, Parijata, and Dhruva, they don't have children. So it's a kind of I think that's kind of unique, at least I think as ISKCON develops, that grihasthas will generally have children. And then, so when the children get older, and you're not going to have any more children, and they can take care of themselves, and that would seem to be we're getting close to vanaprastha life.
There was a mention of Srila Prabhupada saying it was the most detestable thing when someone stays in household life, right, till the end. And I think we've seen the examples of both, where a devotee like Murijan Prabhu or Vaisheshika Prabhu, why should they take sannyas? They're already equal to a sannyasi. Their wives are great preachers or great devotees. But that's not the same. That's not grihastha life. They're not breeding children. They're not living with the sons and the grandkids and everybody yelling and screaming and poking granddad and jumping on his lap. They're retired. They're engaged. They're in a mode of dignified spiritual life. It's another level, you know, versus staying in the home and helping breed all the next generations and, you know, getting in all the gossip of the family and the daughters-in-laws and the intrigues.
I certainly wasn't going to bring it up with Jayadvaita Swami was here, but there is a statement. It's actually in the Bhagavatam, I think. It's not even in a letter, where if husband and wife are leading a Krishna-conscious lifestyle, there's no need for sannyas.
Right.
Of course, other times he would say, he would quote, what's the Sanskrit? After 50, go to the forest.
I forget the Sanskrit.
Yeah. Pancha something.
Antar something.
Yeah.
Kanteya, do you have another question in your hand?
Oh.
We have 8 minutes.
A lot of issues that need more attention. Focus were raised through the weekend, be it the need for Gurukulas or Varnashram College or self-sufficient farm-based devotee communities. As someone who is a quote-unquote new convert, what could be an application point for aspiring devotees like myself? More specifically, what should be actionable steps in the short term for young professionals or students who are aspiring to be devotees? The short answer... Who is that? Can we ask who wrote this? You. Well, the short answer would be focus on your circle of influence. You're somewhere, I don't know where, you do something, I don't know what, are you in touch with some devotees, I don't know who, but you do have energy, you do have ideas, you have time on your circle of influence. Take one element, you know, you mentioned Gurukul, Varnashram College, your farm, it could be deity worship, it could be book distribution, it could be this or that, food for life. Take something and focus on that and give your contribution to that. See, the goal is not to fix all the issues. And okay, now we are done. There's nothing else to be done. That's not the spirit. We are born in a particular historical time. These are the themes. These are the needs. We have this opportunity. We have this blessings. We are giving a service. We should focus on that. And the goal is not to fix everything, to complete everything. Also because the nature of devotional service is that when you do it successfully, it expands. It expands. Okay? So, focus on something, do something, don't just worry about the whole world and the next 10,000 years. And, and know that whatever you do, especially if you're successful, the service will expand.
We're going to enter into our last question. And Bud Sal is going to read it. Oh, you have a question?
I was wondering, do we have a standardized ISKCON Hare Krishna curriculum for homeschooling? And if not, how difficult would it be given our pool of devotees who can maybe develop such a curriculum? How hard would it be to do that? And do we see, number three, if that would be very beneficial, if people had, somewhere they can go to ISKCON, they can give them the curriculum and take the fear of the unknown out of this whole homeschooling.
Well, our mothers practice. That are doing homeschooling can probably respond better, but I have experience interacting with maybe 20 parents, 25 parents doing homeschooling. Some have completed it because their children have now, completed their schooling in college now. My understanding is, this is my understanding, Mother Rudha Mataji is in Boise, Idaho, is the acharya for homeschooling. She started it. She's propagated it. She guides hundreds of families across America, maybe beyond America, and she helps them select from options that are according to the state law. There's, dozens of options, and according to state law, some fit, some don't fit, and she helps guide them out of, the multiple options, and then they select, and she helps them refine their selection, and she's like, homeschooling acharya. We should give her a certificate for in North America, at least, for homeschool acharya. And many homeschooling mothers or families look to her in that way. And it's not just one curriculum. It depends state by state, and there's options to choose from. There's homeschooling groups. Another very nice, successful model is Jumana Jeevana and his wife, Sri Radhika Rajabihari, know them very well. She's part of a homeschooling group for that need the children have of, association. So, hang out and play together and do stuff together where people are principled, et cetera, et cetera. So it's Aruta is the person. I don't believe there is a curriculum. There's multiple curriculums, some like this one, some like that one.
Do we have some way of encouraging families to go that direction, like within the individual temples?
Well, I do it just on one-on-one. And those that aren't disciples, just as I travel, because people kind of know I'm a cheerleader for homeschooling.
Yeah.
And so, I do the get out the pom-poms and do rah-rah. Homeschooling and go to Aruta, or here's six other people that are doing successful homeschooling, why don't you connect with them? But second is this message that Kaunteya delivered, which I also believe, Kaunteya, that I don't know if it's like a separate conference unto itself, but part of the Varnashram conference part two is how to do this. And it doesn't have to be one model, it can be multiple models. I'd like to see that part of a phase two. And so if it's something like Varnashram, it's not just you know, somebody's into it, and it's that's it. But, you know, if it's something that a number of persons start taking an interest in, like this, and, you know, the wave starts to spread, and, it, you know, concentric circles go out, and, you know, we just keep doing it and keep the sound. So similarly with homeschooling model, I think that's another way to respond to your question. If it's more talked about and thought about and entertained, people will consider it more. Yeah. Especially all this, like, and when people hear these recordings and say, you know, just hear Conte alone, what to speak of some of the others, what's all was, you know, this. Are we ready to turn our children over to this other system?
Yeah.
And isn't there conscientious parents are looking for other models. And if there isn't a school, then it's homeschooling until there's a school. And then those that are doing homeschooling are thinking, gee, wouldn't it be nice to have a school? Anyway, it just sound vibration will help create interest. We're already at 1 o'clock.
You.
We're already at 1 o'clock. So should we take one more question or should we keep our schedule? Let's take one more question. Best question.
Okay, just one quick comment.
Go ahead.
That homeschool is even going to become more difficult because the public school system hates it. Because the public school system is dependent on how many people they have enter their school for their finances. So they really hate it. And they try to, you know, do whatever they can to make it as hard as possible to do homeschool. So in Houston, they've started this Gurukula, and there's three devotees that are more or less pushing it on and trying to use this as a satellite program. Mother Urmila is in charge of creating a curriculum as they go on. And so my suspicion is that whatever curriculum they have that they're using in that school could also be used as at homeschool if you could get a hold of the curriculum. My wife just got a bunch of books from a devotee who used to be a teacher and had all these books. And she just took those books and then used them to teach Krishna. Anyway, here's the last question, I guess. So if the foundation of genuine respect is humility, how does that apply to citizens or devotees of higher stature in their relationships with subordinates? How is humility appropriately expressed and genuine respect appropriately shown to those who are junior or subservient? That's the best thing I could say about that is that advanced devotees are supposed to give their association to those that are less advanced. And those who are less advanced are supposed to seek out that association of those who are more advanced. Now, there's nobody wears a sign around their neck saying that I'm advanced or I'm not so advanced. So the first thing is we treat everyone, even the insects, with respect, and we're mindful that everyone is a spirit soul, and that's where our equality lies. So specifically how that's done is by someone who's has a elevated position amongst the society and is due some respect because of that position. Now, how will they act towards their subordinates? They should act as their servants as well. Because they are. Abhiram is going to comment on this also.
Well, you've given a very good foundation.
He expresses this
perhaps,
very nicely.
Perhaps Srila Prabhupada is the perfect example, as in most things, for us to look to. He had no fear to be the leader, to say when we were fools, we were in error. But when he was asked, you remember the famous story, he was asked on the stage, are you George Harrison's guru? He said, I am no one's guru. I am everyone's servant. Right? So he lived in a state of humility. And he appreciated us so much. But he was put in the position of elder. What could he do? He was the elder. He was the acharya. So he had to call out the foolishness when it was required. So elder has to play his role, has to respond, point out, but in their heart, if they're Vaishnavas, that you won't be, it's an oxymoron to call a person a prideful Vaishnava. It's impossible. Pride is the antithesis of bhakti. Wherever there's pride, bhakti cannot exist. So the solution in all cases is our Vaishnava aspiration to become Vaishnavas. And if you've lived in India for some time, or spent time in India, some of you come from India, you know it's very naturally manifested there amongst cultured people. An elder can be an elder, no problem, without being arrogant, but they take the responsibility of directing the family and calling a chastising. They have to chastise sometimes. Not for their own pride, but for the benefit of the junior.
Any concluding comments from... Okay, so I think we finished this session, and two things. Just Satyasara, I'm sure, will keep his word that within 2 to 3 days, whatever recorded material we have will go out, and you can view it again, download it, or whatever you, however you do those things. And I'll sort out a possible date or two when we could have another gathering. I'll consult with Padmanarayan Swami, because he's rah-rah, we got to do this. And let's see. We'll keep you informed through whatever that communication method that Satyasara uses. Thank you all for coming. Travel safely back to your destination. Hare Krishna.